Hey everyone, welcome to the Front Stretch Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albina. Now, as always, I'm joined by my colleague, Mike Neff, as we'll break down all the action from Richmond Raceway this past weekend. Martin Truex Jr. was able to capture his first win at Joe Gibbs Racing and Richmond on Saturday, as there was a good four-car battle for the win. You'll get our take on that, as well as the new qualifying procedure and much more. And then, Matt DiBenedetto joins the show to discuss his Richmond race, as well as his first season with Levine Family Racing. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the Front Stretch Podcast on Apple Podcasts, and once you do, you'll get it sent straight to your smartphone once it's published. And those ratings help us out tremendously. Now let's throw it to my conversation with Neff. All right, Neff, pretty interesting race at Richmond this past weekend. I would say the first 300-350 laps were just average, but then the last 50 laps, you had Martin Truex Jr., Clint Bowyer, Joey Logano, and then they got to battling. You had Kevin Harvick, Denny Hamlin join the show at the front. Really good ending to the race, in my opinion.
I mean, the tire, I still think, is a slight issue there, but not as much as it was, and I think that's why it was a great race. Richmond, for me, Richmond has probably been my favorite track on a schedule for a long time. And then it kind of slid down a little bit when they were messing with that multi-zone tire. Mm-hmm. But now that, I don't know if they're still using it or not, or if they've gotten away from it a little bit, but it seemed that we were almost back to old Richmond. And I know there were some people complaining about it because of the fact that you'd get next to somebody and it'd take you so long to get past them. That's the beauty of Richmond. That's what I've always loved about that place, is if you can get to the guys inside, you don't have the whole track to go up, and it's a matter of just lap after lap gaining an inch until you finally, either they slip up or you get a good run and you get clear of them, and then you go chase down the next guy. And I think if it's not the perfect racetrack for stock car racing, it's damn close.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that, but the tire, I was at Richmond, the tire wasn't laying down any rubber, and you hear our conversation with Matt DiBenedetto later, and he thought that was kind of an issue and one of the reasons why you couldn't pass, because the track wasn't taking rubber. I mean, you had guys at the beginning of the race who failed pre-race inspection, like Jimmy Johnson, Eric Jones, even Denny Hamlin, Daniel Suarez. They couldn't pass. I think at the end of the first stage, Hamlin was only 20th, and I mean, Richmond short track, that's his bread and butter. So I don't know. The race definitely got better as it went on, but it was so interesting to see these top teams not being able to pass some, even the smaller teams. I don't know. What's your take on that?
I mean, again, that's the beauty of Richmond, is it's a short track, but it's still got that speed like an intermediate, and it's almost a great equalizer because of the fact that it is so difficult to pass, and it puts a premium on getting up front and staying up front, which we saw out of Kyle Busch. Yep. You know, he arguably was the best car out front, but once he got back in the pack, it took him forever to get through it, and he didn't make it back to the front. So again, we've had the discussion of tires before, that I think there's way too much rocket science in the tires these days, and I would like to see, you know, three options, and they go to the same as at all the tracks, but yeah, I mean, it works for Formula One. I don't understand why it can't work in stock cars, but at the same time, everybody's on the same tires. And I don't know that the tires were that determining of a factor. I think it's more of the cars being sealed off to the track, but mostly just the track, and like it or hate it. I've personally like it, because that's just the way I love Richmond, and the way that it puts a premium on driver ability to get the car to come off of the track at a high speed.
Yeah, like you said, the unstoppable Kyle Busch was kind of stopped on Saturday because of being in dirty air. Clean air is always king. It always will be. Doesn't matter the track. Seems more so important this year than ever, really. And yeah, Richmond, Kyle just got mired in the back after a speeding penalty. You know, he got out front early in the first stage, led 101 laps, won the first stage. But then once that speeding penalty happened, we didn't really hear from him a lot. But then he got...
Yeah, but again, I don't know that it's air. I still think that at Richmond, yes, there's air. We've established that anytime you're going over 50 miles an hour, there's a factor of air. But but I honestly think at that track, it's just a matter of you really need the whole track to run fast. And when a car is on the outside and you can't go all the way up, you're having to work that throttle. And the guy that works it better is able to make the passes. But unfortunately for Kyle, he just didn't have enough time to make it back through the whole field, which is saying something considering he had a couple hundred laps to do it.
Yeah, actually, it's funny that you pointed out that, you know, you don't have the full track at Richmond. It's maybe not wide enough, because Denny Hamlin said the same thing post-race to me. It's just not wide enough to get these runs down the straightaways and then complete a pass. So you're right. Maybe that is the reason why, you know, they were struggling to pass.
And that's the beauty of Richmond. That's why I love that track, just because it's, I mean, it's such close quarters, and yet at the same time, you're not really beating and banging. It's kind of the best of both worlds.
All right, Neff. Finally, Martin Truex Jr., 9 races in, gets his first win with Joe Gibbs Racing.
On a short track.
Yeah, first time. He was 1-for-81 now. He led 186 laps, though. It's the fifth out of... In 5 out of the last 6 races at Richmond, he's led over 120 laps, which is the most laps led in each race. I mean, it was about damn time, right? I mean, we saw this coming.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, it's... It was just one of those fluke things that happen in sports in general, you know, where somebody's so good and there's just some bugaboo that seems to constantly bite them, and eventually they overcome it. I mean, look, it was like Dale Earnhardt at Daytona, you know. The guy won everything under the sun there but could not win the 500. And it was the same with Martin with short tracks. We knew he had it. It was just a matter of time. And finally, he had a race where things didn't conspire against him, and they didn't have some last-minute caution where, you know, guys came in and took tires, or the pit crew messed up or something, and it cost him. So, yeah, we all knew he was going to get a short track win. We all knew he'd get one at JGR. It's just a matter of what goes on from here. And at this point, we're still seeing if anybody can touch Joe Gibbs or the Penske team.
Yeah, Gibbs has won 6 of 9 races so far, and they've dominated a lot of races, even though, you know, Penske's dominated a lot, too, and let a lot slip away, as we've talked on this podcast a lot in recent weeks. But Truex, you know, it's funny, in the post-race press conference, and just post-race in general, both he and Cole Pearn thought they were going to lose it there at the end, and maybe that's because of their recent bad luck at Richmond, where they lead all these laps and, you know, let it get away. But in reality, I don't think he had the best car at the end. I thought Bowyer was faster. I thought Logano was faster. And if you look at Harvick and Hamlin, they were both 5 and I think 9 seconds back, and it closed rapidly on that battle for the lead because they were obviously battling hard. But, hey, kudos to Truex. He held the field off.
Absolutely, yeah. He said that in the post-race, that that last round or that last run was not their best, and that he wasn't at the best that he had been all night. But, again, it's Richmond. If you do it right and you're out in front and you can kind of dictate the race a little bit, and that's what he did. He did exactly what he needed to do and held him off just long enough to get the win.
Did you think he was going to get past there at the end?
I wasn't sure. I mean, it felt like there was an onslaught coming, and it was going to be a matter of if he tried to block one, somebody else was going to go on the other side of him or something, and you were going to end up having a really crazy end. But when it all came down, he was fortunately just far enough ahead of him that didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, had there been another 2 laps, maybe?
I think 2 laps would have been it.
I think it would have been Martinsville 2.0 from last fall with Logano and Truex. But I got to be honest, I was surprised Bowyer didn't get by. You know, you have, when you think of those two races in Richmond, you think back to, what, 2013 with Spingate with Michael Halter Bracing, but Bowyer legitimately was side-by-side with Truex a few times and just couldn't complete the pass. I don't know if he just didn't want to, you know, bump into him or what, but I was surprised he didn't get by because he had many, many chances to get by the 19 car.
Yeah, he was definitely fast, but again, it's that Richmond thing where you get to the bottom and you got to have the whole track to get the run off, and I don't know if he just never – if he didn't have the car to go in on the outside or if he just never wanted to take that chance. But it seemed like he couldn't get it done on the inside, and he never put himself in a position to try to get it done on the outside.
Yeah, Bowyer started off the year kind of, you know, so-so, but lately he's been in short tracks or his wheelhouse. So, yeah. Not surprised. He ran well at Bristol last week, obviously Richmond this week, and Martinsville. I mean, he ran well too. So, Texas, he had a second-place finish. So, the 14 teams definitely turning around. Logano, he was disappointed after the race because he believes this is the third straight race where he's had a race-winning car and yet hasn't picked up a victory in either of those three races. So, what's your take on Logano? I mean, obviously, he's got the win at Vegas, and Penske's very fast. As we saw him and Brad both lead laps on Saturday night. Ryan Blaney was kind of out to lunch, but that seems to be the case whenever we go to Richmond. But what's your case on Logano?
It's one of those deals. It's a matter of everything's got to be right to win these races. Winning these races is really hard, and everything's got to fall perfect, and those guys just seem like they've got the speed, they've got the team, everything's there, but it's just that there's some slight mistake, and I don't even really have to say mistake, some slight tweak where they get just a little out of it on that last run, or they're a little too loose or a little too tight, or they come in a little late on a pit stop or something that's bit them. And in the end, they're probably going to end up winning four races this year. It's just a matter of getting them all the way to the finish. And for whatever reason, they've stepped on it here a couple times with what seemed like the fastest car. But if you continue to bring fast cars to the racetrack, eventually you're going to get to the front at the right time and be able to hold on and get some wins.
Yeah, I agree with that. He'll definitely be in contention to win at Talladega next week. Obviously, we have off week this week, but I wouldn't be surprised if he won. Won there last year. He's won there three times in his career. Neff, I want to hit on Kevin Harvick a little bit because he won the pole. He had a fast car, obviously. Led 30 laps and then kind of faded during the race, but then kind of came back up through the field towards the end of the race. He said after the race, you know, Dustin Long asked him about if this. It's kind of a frustrating year because at this point last year he had, I think, three wins and they're all, you know, right in a row at the beginning of the year. Yep. And he just said that, you know, you guys are setting too high of expectations with the team. So we're a quarter of the way through the year right now. I mean, Harvick's still good, very good, in fact. But where would you kind of gauge where they're at so far?
Yeah, it's just a matter of last year was the perfect year for SHR. I mean, they were coming to the track, rolling the cars out of the truck and being the fastest four in practice right out of the truck. And with the new rules and what they're working on this year, they just haven't got the package where they need it yet. But knowing Tony Gibson and that gang over there, I'm sure they're pounding away at it and they're going to the wind tunnel every other day and they're going to figure it out. And eventually they'll get back to that spot. But like, I agree with Harvick. You're setting an expectation based on last year, which was almost a perfect year for them. And it's just too much to expect. They're close, as is Hendrick, as is the one team at Ganassi. You know, there's other cars that are close or just not quite there yet, and SHR is right there with them. I think you've seen it out of Harvick maybe the last two or three weeks even, that it seems like they're getting closer. And I've said most of the year that I think Charlotte is kind of the gauge to see where everybody's at by the time they get to Charlotte. And once we're there, I think everybody's going to have a pretty good handle on this package. And from then on, it's probably going to be similar to last year where clean air is king and we all go out there and run around in a parade.
Yeah.
Sadly.
Yeah, I mean, Harvick even mentioned post-race that it took him 18 years to have a career year. So I think he's right, too, with expectations being too high. But you look at Stuart Haas Racing as a whole, and sure, you know, they changed over to the Mustang, and there's the new aero rules, whatever. But they won 12 races last year. Now, currently, Joe Gibbs Racing has won 6 out of 9. So by my math, it'd be they're on average winning 24 races, which isn't going to happen. I don't think, but maybe they got a really good stacked lineup, and they're obviously running well this year. But where do you see Harvick? I mean, is it any week that he could kind of break through?
Yeah, I think you're looking at any time in the next month, he's probably going to get a win, and then I wouldn't be surprised to see him rip off 4 or 5 because that's where they're at. You know, once they get the package to where they win with it, they're going to replicate that across all 4 cars, and they're going to be right back where they were last year. I think it's a matter of getting these. When you're dealing with thousands of an inch that translate to tenths of a second, I mean, fine-tuning is almost an understatement as to what you're doing. And they're really close, and once they get that last little bit, they're going to be right back where they were last year.
Yeah, and Suarez seemed to have a good car on Saturday night, but just had a penalty late. Almirola was just kind of average. I mean, he started in the back, but got, you know, he got into about the top 12, 15, and then he had a penalty the same stop that Suarez had a penalty. So, and then Boyer obviously finished third. So, Suarez is definitely still fast. They need a perfect race. I mean, that's what you need to do. Truex had a perfect race the other night in order to win it. Neff, I want to bring up some drivers. Austin Dillon, Ryan Newman, Paul Menard, all got their second top 10 of the year this past weekend. I gotta be honest, I was surprised at Dillon. I don't have this in front of me, but I believe that's his best finish at Richmond. It's his best finish of the year for sure, at 6th. And he just had speed all weekend, and it just seemed like as the race went on, you know, he passed Kyle Busch and Brad Keselowski during the final run, and he got a 6th place finish, which is good for the 3 team after, you know, they've had speed this year, but not the finishes.
Yeah, Danny Stockman and Austin Dillon are just a great team, and they've been apart for a while, and now they're back together, and they're slowly but surely tweaking this thing and figuring it out. And as we've seen all year, the RCR has had speed. Now they just got to start putting the races together. And Dillon is good on D-shaped ovals, generally mile and a half. But again, Richmond's a glorified, or a shrunk down mile and a half. So it's in his wheelhouse, and I wasn't totally surprised to see it with the speed they've had this year. It's just a matter of, again, they're crossing T's and dotting I's, and it's not going to be long before I think we're going to see them in contention for legit race wins every week, which it's been a while since we've seen the 3 in that position.
Right.
But I feel like, I mean, we saw them win in trucks, we saw them win in Xfinity, and I think you'll see them do it in the Cup Series as well. I don't know. I have always felt like Dillon was one of the 2 or 3 that really has a shot to win the championship in all 3 national series. And now that he's back with Danny Stockman, I think it's a legit opportunity. The other thing, I want to give a shout out to Stockman. He posted a picture on Facebook the other day of a guy running around in a go-kart. And I mean, he claims it's him. It's got a helmet on, so you can't really see him, but I take him at his word. But if it is, he's lost a person. I mean, Danny's always been a big boy, and he ain't big anymore.
Yeah,
and he even made the comment about that. But yeah, he is definitely slimmed down. But I give him credit; he's legitimately lost a person.
Yeah, he did the keto diet, or is on the keto diet. I know Matt Tiff last year kind of started it with him. Well, he went to Matt Tiff for help for it because Matt Tiff's been doing it for about a year and a half. And yeah, he's lost a ton of weight doing it. And hey, the keto diet definitely works. I've been on it for a little bit. Moving right along, Neff. Newman, we talked about him last week. I feel like he's turned definitely the 6 team around, and you could say even Roush Funding Racing around to a degree. They're still not, you know, contending for wins or even top 5s for that matter. But Newman's got 2 straight top 10s, and at Texas 3 weeks ago, I mean, he ran top 10 the whole race, finished 11th. So this is the best that 6 car's been. I know I said this last week too, but in a very long time.
Yeah, that's about all I can say to that is, yeah, it was surprising to me. I really felt like when you had Kenseth in that car that it was going to turn around. And yeah, they made some improvements, but not much. And Newman has really made a difference in that car. Now, mind you, there have been some short track races, which allow for a little more driver and a little less car. We'll see how it goes when we get back to some of these bigger tracks again. But I agree. I feel like he has made a difference there. And, you know, passing Ryan Newman's always a major chore. But you have to have the car to be able to hold people off. And I think they're getting closer to having a car than they have in a long time.
Yeah, it's funny that you say, you know, obviously the old joke is, you know, to get around Ryan Newman is very hard to do. But I was watching the race Saturday night from the press box, and I think it was during stage one or two. Denny Hamlin caught Newman, and it was like for 20th position. So they weren't running well at the time, but it took him, I don't know, 10, 15 laps to get around Newman. And then once he did, I mean, he was flying. He caught the next back cars really quickly. But it's so hard to pass Newman, and it's kind of fun to watch.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He will drive you crazy. There's no question about that, and frustrate the hell out of you. But, I mean, similar to Logano and similar to Stenhouse, that's the way they always race. And you know when you get to them that that's what you've got coming. And it's rare that Newman drives you dirty. I mean, he drives you hard, but it's rare that he drives you dirty. And you know that when you get to him, and you just got to be prepared for it. As long as, and you hear a lot of guys say that, I'll race you the way you race me. And they know that he's going to race them hard, but they know he's going to race them clean. And so that's just, you got to kind of put up with that when you get up to that six car.
Yeah. So definitely, you know, good turnaround for Newman over the past couple weeks. I want to talk about Chip Ganassi Racing a little bit. Kurt Busch qualified third, but with Eric Jones, you know, he fouled post-qualifying inspection, so he started at the rear. Kurt moved up to second. He just kind of was there all night, finished 11th. But he's not the one I want to hit on primarily, Neff. Kyle Larson. We've talked about him a lot on this year, this podcast this year, for bad reasons, honestly, because they just haven't had good luck. And we were talking off-air about this. Man, in practice, they only had one practice this week at Richmond because the second one got rained out. But he was fastest, and he looked very good on the short and long runs. And then once the race started, he was just outside the top 10 the entire time. I think he finished 13th or 14th in stage one. And then in stage two, had a tire go down, crashed after having a loose wheel, what he thought. There's a tire rub. So, you know, they came in to pit it, pulled the fender out, and then 10 laps later, he's in the wall. So finished last for the second time in the last 3 weeks. What's going on?
I'm not sure. It's one of those things where you look at it and I'm like, they haven't changed the team up much. So there's the pieces should all be in place to be doing the same thing. It feels like at least a good bit of it is just crappy luck. I mean, it's, you know, Daniel Hemric, we joked about that last week, was looking for lucky charms. And I feel like Larson should be the same way, that they've, you know, they ended up qualifying back a little further than they should have. And that kind of ends up putting them into an area where you can get into trouble. And somebody, you know, gets below him and he bounces it off the wall. And then he gets the fender rub and they don't clear it well enough. So he cut it down and then it was over. And obviously the organization has the ability because Kurt is running lights out. And I don't know if it's a pressure thing because Kurt's doing so well, or if it's just I feel like it's just a stretch of bad luck. I mean, I really feel like they almost can't get out of their own way. And it's a matter of needing to have one or two good runs to kind of shake this off, and then they can get back to the old 42. But I don't know. I think they need to sacrifice a chicken or something.
Yeah, I mean, with the recent string of bad luck, they're 19th in points right now. And, I mean, they're not far out of the top 16. They're 9 points out. But you look at the first couple weeks of the year, I mean, look at Atlanta. He led 142 laps, got a stage win, had a pit road penalty, can never get back to the front, finished 12th. He's got a bunch of 12s this year. I think he's got 3 12th place finishes, a high finish of 6th at Phoenix. But he has, like, 3 finishes outside the top 30, so a lot of inconsistency. And I don't mean this as a knock, but we've seen a lot of inconsistency from Larson throughout his career, especially, you know, the first two or three years of his career, and it took him, what, 100 races to get a win. So I don't know. We all talk about Kyle Larson being this extraordinary talent, and he is. He can drive anything on wheels. But he's got to start winning. I mean, he's on this. He hasn't won in a year and a half. So I don't know. You know, you have Kurt, like you said, over there. He's seventh in points and running really, really well. And then you got Larson, who's just there. I mean, they're not even contending for top tens lately.
Yeah, and I don't picture Larson being somebody that worries about behind the scenes stuff. The rumor has always been from when he got into the sport that eventually he was going to end up at Hendrick, and I don't know if that rumor is still legit, if you know or what, but it makes you wonder in the background if there's something going on there and that's a distraction. I still feel like the pressure from Kurt performing so well is a bigger distraction. But I'm with you. I mean, you're a phenom, and you haven't won in a year and a half after you broke through and got a few wins. And the time is running out before we go from phenom to failure. And, you know, you don't want to call Kyle Larson a failure because, as you said, he's won at everything. But I don't know if it's time for a change of scenery, or we, like I said, just need to sacrifice a chicken or something to get the bad luck off of him. But I still feel like he's one of the top five or six drivers in the sport. It's just that the results haven't been there yet.
Yeah, pure talent-wise, I'd say he's probably top two or three. Like we both said, he can drive anything. But you look at his career as a whole, I mean, yes, he had, you know, 2016 and 17, and even last year he ran, you know, well, 19 top tens. 17 was a breakout year with four wins, but he didn't get a win last year, didn't get a win in his rookie or sophomore year. So, you know, this is his sixth full-time year, and he's gone winless three of the 5 years he's been in the sport. So, and it took him so long also to win an Xfinity. I mean, yes, there's a lot of adapting to these cars, and there's just a lot of inconsistency if you look at it. So it's kind of feast or famine. An average finish of 18th this year, which is his worst since 2015. I don't know, man. I'm kind of at a loss for words because he's just there this year. And, you know, a lot of whether maybe it's the crew chief fairing with him and Chad Johnson. Maybe that's kind of run its course because it's been a while now. You know, that's the only thing I can really think of because the chemistry, there's something not right.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely something that is not, at least not appearing to get him to run to his full potential. I can't legitimately say that he's not got potential. I mean, I've been a Kyle Larson fan ever since I saw him running midgets at IRP and running mini outlaws at Millbridge, and the things I've seen him do in other cars, obviously he has immense talent. And so it's just a matter of, you may be right. It may be that the crew chief pairing has run its course and we need to pair him with somebody else. I don't know. I feel like I'd still want to see this year run out just because I feel like they've had some bad luck. And I think with Kurt running as well as he is, I'd like to see them run the whole season. But if he manages to go another year without a win, I completely agree that a major change is needed, whether it's him getting a new crew chief or him going to a different team.
Yeah, and as far as the young guys winning, I mean, that's just, it seems to be a necessity every year now. Not every year, but a lot last year. I mean, obviously Chase didn't get his win until his 100th race too, I believe. Maybe it was his 99th. But, you know, you look at the teams that have won this year alone, only two organizations, but five drivers. And those five drivers, you know, three from Gibbs are Hamlin, Kyle Busch, and Truex, all over 10 years of experience. And then at the Penske, you got Logano and Keselowski. Keselowski's in his 10th full-time year this year. And then Logano's over 10 years in the sport. And then you look at the two drivers, you know, combined in that organization that haven't won, and you got Ryan Blaney and Eric Jones. So the young guys, I know we've talked about this in the past, but we're getting the same winners every week, literally, this year. It just, I don't know. Larson, I feel like, is the... I feel like he's always been kind of the leader of the younger drivers. I mean, he's in his sixth full-time year now, so you can't really consider him a young driver anymore, I don't think. But, I mean, what did the younger drivers have to do? Because they got the same equipment, you know, from Gibbs and Penske we're talking about now, to win races.
I mean, we're... This year is a bit of a anomaly, I think. They pointed out on... I think it was during a pre-race show this weekend that this is the lowest number of winners through nine races that we've ever had, or not that we've had in the last like 20 years. Mm. So it's a matter of, I mean, you got a couple guys that are hot and or a couple organizations that are hot, and their seasoned drivers are the ones that are winning the races. The sport's different than it used to be. You used to pay your dues and come up through and not be a rookie until you're in your 30s. And now you're a rookie in your teens. And guys are getting their seasoning at the top levels instead of getting their seasoning in the trucks.
Right.
And occasionally in Xfinity. And I think it's a matter of these younger drivers just learning how to win. And... yeah, you get that occasional week where you catch lightning in a bottle and you end up winning because factors lined up and you ended up winning. But to truly consistently win takes a different skill set. And to cross over sports, you saw it this weekend in golf.
Yep.
I mean, they talked about it on the 12th hole at Augusta. And the fact that Tiger Woods has played 86 competitive rounds of golf at Augusta. And they went to 12, and the group in front of him and the two guys in his group all put it in the water because they were shooting at the pin on 12. Tiger sticks it in the middle of the green, takes a 40-footer, two putts, and goes on. And it's because unless you truly need to make up a bunch of strokes, it's too risky of a gamble to throw it at that pin. You learn that through 80 some rounds of golf. And the same thing with winning races. You learn when to put your car in an awkward spot, when not to put it in an awkward spot, how to make things work, how to make the tires last, how to find speed in different grooves. And it's kind of to circle back around to our Larson discussion. That's the thing about Larson that surprises me the most, I think, of late, is that he was always really good at finding speed by moving his car around. And this year it doesn't seem like he's able to do that. And I think that's the one piece that seems to be missing for him this year is his ability to kind of move the car around and find speed at different spots on the track.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of that could be the package. I mean, that's not an easy answer, but you could go to the answer and just say that that's the case because, you know, when I thought this package was coming, when you knew it was coming into play, first driver I thought of was Larson because he always runs the top. And so this year is probably going to be more drivers running the top. And that's not going to, you know, that's where he finds speed a lot of the times, right against the wall. So,
yeah,
not the case this year. That'll be one of the big stories to watch going forward because we got what? 18 races before 16 races 17 races left before the cutoff, and right now he's 19th in points. Now do I think he'll get back into the playoffs? I probably convincingly too. But it's definitely something to watch.
I'm curious what happens if Kurt rips off three or four wins.
Yeah, that's true.
Kyle's still 16th or 17th in points. That's when it'll start to get even more interesting if you see Kurt, because Kurt's knocking on that door. Yep. And you know as well as I do, you keep turning in top fives, and they eventually turn into wins. And he's right there. It's just a matter of him getting on a little tear. I would bet it'll happen before then, but if not, I would bet the Coke 600 is where you see Kurt get his first win of the year.
You heard it here first.
You heard it here first.
All right, Neff. Anything else you want to talk about the Cup race, or you want to talk about this qualifying procedure that happened this past weekend?
I think that's about it. I enjoyed the Cup race more than I have in a little while at Richmond. Again, it's still, I think, is climbing its way back to my favorite track on the schedule. And kudos to the folks at Richmond for the improvements they made in the infield. My one disappointment or complaint is that they took out the photographer stand in turns one and two. That was always one of my favorite spots to shoot from, and it's disappointing we don't get that anymore. But they still give you a couple options, which is more than some tracks give us, so we'll take that. But yeah, I thought it was a good race. I think it's, I don't know if it was the best race of the year because Bristol was awful darn good.
Yeah, I'd say Bristol.
But it was, it's up there in the top three or four for the year so far.
Agreed. And you hit on the new, like, reconfiguration of the infield there. And I mean, it's very nice. Yes. The garages are huge, the stalls themselves. But I don't like the fact that they took all the Xfinity haulers, all but like the top 10 or 12 in points, and put them outside the track. It makes it hard to get, you know, access to the Xfinity teams, which, you know, I need to do. But I don't know. Maybe there's something they could work on in the future. But it's very nice. The garage is, you know, like top notch as far as stops on the circuit. But Neff, qualifying. That was a big talking point this week with NASCAR moving it, and they announced it, I believe, after the last time we recorded last Tuesday. Yeah, they must have. The first round's only 5 minutes now, as opposed to, I think it was, what, 15? I mean, that's a big change.
That's a really big change, trying to fit all the cars through in that period of time. It can get a little dodgy. I mean, I'm so tired of talking about qualifying. It's
understandable.
Qualifying. I mean, I would just as soon watch them just draw pills and go, in all honesty. I think you would end up with better shows half the time if you did that. But it's qualifying. We just spend so much. It's like tech. We spend so much time with talking about and farting around with qualifying, but it means so little. That I know what they're trying to get away from this guy's waiting to go out and draft and whatever, and I don't know that it mattered at Richmond because you're not drafting there. It's good to get a round under your belts before you go someplace where you're going to have drafting involved in qualifying. In the grand scheme of things, I still feel like by the time we get to the playoffs, I think we're going to be back to single car qualifying.
Yeah.
I just don't see a way around it.
I feel like that's kind of the way to go too now. Like, before Friday, on Friday, Denny Hamlin was in the media center, and he thought that, you know, someone's going to get screwed, and he straight up said that at Richmond because you have, you know, there's going to be a lot of congestion. 37 cars there were this past weekend, and trying to get a clean lap in 5 minutes, there's no, you can't wait around. And you can't make a second run, really, either. You can't come back in. I mean, you can try. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. tried, and then he couldn't make another lap. He had a bad lap, and then in the final round, I think it was, so less congestion. Only 12 cars, but he came back in, changed the air pressures, you know, whatever, made an adjustment, but couldn't get back out. So, I think it's more pressure on the drivers now, because if you mess up once, you're kind of screwed. But at the same time, I don't know, I feel like single car qualifying is kind of going to be the way to go, like you said, probably by the playoffs. But there's just been so many changes. That's like the third change of qualifying this year already, and we're 9 races in.
Yep. It's, like I said, it's crazy that we're spending this much time and effort on it. I wish it would just go away and we go back to single car.
Yeah, I mean, that would solve a lot of things. I think, like you said, drawing a pill would be really cool, I think. We see the, like, local dirt tracks, and it works really well. You know, the cream still rises at the top. You could have, you know, a week where you invert the field, whatever. I don't know. Maybe they should try that for like an All-Star race or something, which they've inverted the field there before. And it's, I don't know. You could say it's worked or it didn't work, but it'd be entertaining to say the least. But yeah, I'm kind of sick of the qualifying aspect too. But I mean, honestly, it's been one of the major talking points of the year because, you know, at Richmond, yes, you had 5 minutes and a lot of congestion. But when you go to, I'll just throw Kansas out there. It's not going to matter. They're going to run in a single line. 5 minutes, they wait till the last minute and a half anyway. So it's not going to matter. You're just going to get a draft.
Yep. Exactly. I just hope we eventually figure something out so we quit talking about it. Maybe we can get back to talking about pit guns.
Yeah, right?
Those things are still sucking and nobody's talking about them anymore. I'm surprised that it's still not a topic. I guess that people have just thrown up their hands and given up, but it seems like loose wheels are becoming commonplace almost, and people are just accepting it.
Yeah. We've seen a couple issues this year, I know, especially at Texas. I think we saw two in the cup race. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely an issue that I think needs to be addressed or could be addressed. Maybe it is behind the scenes, and we're not hearing about it. I know that at Richmond, drivers met with NASCAR officials to talk about the state of the sport. That information hasn't been, you know, given out to the public, and it really shouldn't be, probably, because they want to make the sport better. So I think a lot of decisions are going to be made here in the next month or so, and hopefully we get a state, because there's so much change in sports, but in racing in general, especially over the past few years. I'd like to see some consistency going forward. I think we all would. But I do know someone who was consistent in the Xfinity race this week, Neff, and that was Cole Custer. Dominated the race. Him and Allgaier had a pretty good battle. Custer led 122 laps. That's the first time he's won multiple races in his NASCAR career. So this guy, you could argue he's the best Xfinity team right now.
Yeah, I would say that's a fair statement. And I know Cole may have not always been given the credit that I think he's due, but I've always thought he was one of the better young drivers coming up. He may not be as polished in front of the media as some of the other drivers are, but I'd rather have a guy that can wheel it and doesn't give good interviews than a guy that's great with interviews and finishes 12th. So I'm down with that. I think he's got the tools, and I think it's cool that they're kind of taking their time bringing him along, unlike many of these other people that they've rushed up. I feel like he's getting that experience, and I think in the long run, when you see Cole Custer make the move to Cup, he'll be winning and winning consistently much faster than these other young guys that we've been talking about today.
I agree with that. You look at Fontana, for instance. He held off the best of the best, Kyle Busch, late in the going. That had to give him a ton of confidence. It's probably a race he'll remember for the rest of his life, honestly, because he beat the best Xfinity driver ever.
Absolutely.
Heads up. So, and then this weekend, you know, he had a bad restart late in the race. Austin Cindric got by, but it didn't take him long to catch him down. And him and Allgaier, I mean, Allgaier is finally starting to put a streak of races together. I say that, and he crashed out of Bristol, but a streak of races together where he's leading laps in contention for wins, where earlier in the year he wasn't. He was just off. He's led over 200 laps in the past two races. And then there's Ryan Sieg, man. This guy, he's incredible this year. He hasn't had to finish worse than 12th. I think he's 8th in points now, 9th in points, ahead of a couple of JRM drivers, colleague racing drivers. And they were having a party after that race Friday night down on pit lane.
Were they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they had some Larry's Lemonade. That was their sponsor, and it was quite a sight. I mean, it acted like they won the race because in theory, I mean, they're competing against, obviously, you know, not Cup drivers that weekend because it was Dash for Cash race, but a lot of teams have a lot more money than they do, and they're going out there and just, you know, whipping their ass. Honestly, that's the second top five of the year. The first time he's ever had two top fives in a single season. 5 top tens now. I put this statement out on Twitter on Friday night. Might have been right before the race started. And I straight up said, I think that he's going to win a race by the end of the year. And I stand by that. I could see it happen at Talladega. I could also see it happen like in Iowa. Do you think he'll win a race?
Ooh, win a race, I think he could win a race, and I don't think it'll be a road course race.
No.
I think if he wins it, it could be a straight up oval race. I've been on the Sieg bandwagon for a long time, and I've always maintained that he and Ross Chastain are like twin brothers from another mother. They both get more out of less than anybody else in the sport. And ironically, we were down in Daytona this year. We went out to dinner one night, and a gentleman came in wearing the Larry's Lemonade hat. And I went up by while they were ordering, and I just thanked him for sponsoring Sieg and giving him some money, because I think that getting people on board with that program is what it takes to take them to the next level. And it turns out he was some guy from Larry's Lemonade, and he was there with Ryan Sieg's grandmother. And she gave me a hug and said, thank you. And it was just a funny little experience. But I think that if you give Sieg cup level or cup supported equipment, I think it would be just like Chastain was last year.
I do too.
I think you'd see him go out there and run away and run top five every single week. And at the same time, I love that he doesn't have it and that they're doing it the old fashioned way, and they're getting out there and competing in a family owned race car race team and running with these guys. And I don't know the machinations of our sport anymore and what it takes to get a guy like that into a quality ride, but there's nothing else he can do to prove his ability. He has shown consistently that he can do anything with far less equipment than anybody else is doing, and somebody out there needs to give him a shot at some real equipment so he can go out and win a bunch of races.
Yeah, I agree. I have a feature coming out on him this week, which, you know, definitely look at frontstretch.com for that. But he's just so easy to talk to. He's just a down-to-earth dude, and he's a hard-nosed racer. And he's not going to give you an inch on that track. And this year, you know, they did spend more money over the offseason. They got three cars from RCR, which RCR ran last year. When in the past, I mean, Sieg was running cars, you know, chassis that were 3 or 4 years old.
Yep.
So, I mean, just, you know, just with that, he's going to have a bit of an uptick in performance. And sure, the Xfinity fields are down a little bit this year as opposed to last year with, I think, four cars shutting down. But I really do think he's going to win this year. And it's just fun to watch because they got ECR motors this year. So they're getting good equipment, much better than they have the past few years, which, I mean, it's proven itself on the track that, you know, equipment wins. Equipment's key.
Oh, absolutely. That was what the funny thing was when Clements won up there at
right.
Elkhart Lake, was that car was like 7 years old.
Yep.
I mean, it was ridiculous how out of date that car was. Or when, I still laugh, when Brian Keselowski made the Daytona 500 when Brad pushed him in the qualifying race.
Yep.
And Penske offered to give them a new, at the time, Dodge motor for his car, and he couldn't use it because his car was so old that the motor mounts were in the wrong places. And it's just like, you know, you see stories like that, and you love that guys are out there doing that because you know it's sheer will and determination. It's not engineering and bucks. And that's what we all want to see out of this sport. We want to see good drivers prove themselves and move up without the advantage of technology.
Indeed. Well, Neff, we don't have any cup races, any races at all this year in NASCAR, or this weekend, because we have Easter weekend. So what, are you going to keep up with any kind of racing? You going to go in short tracks or anything?
I am not, because Saturday is Hippie Fest in Casey, South Carolina.
Oh, boy.
So I will be over there hanging out at Hippie Fest. But we are running at Myrtle Beach Speedway. And a big shout-out and thank you to Brad Gilley and Doug Turnbull from PRN that are actually coming down to fill in for me on the radio for the Myrtle Beach race. So if you want to listen to the Myrtle Beach race, go to Coastal Country 107.5, and you can get the stream of the race from Myrtle Beach online. No video, but audio. And it starts, green flags are supposed to fly about 4 o'clock on Saturday. And then Sunday, I will be at Myrtle Beach Speedway for the Horry County Fair. We have 10 days of fair fun and frivolity starting actually this Friday at the Speedway. It's always a good time. Always a bunch of people come out and you get to eat everything deep fried that you can imagine. So that's always a great time. But yeah, unfortunately, the way the schedule lined up this weekend, I am not going to be at a racetrack, which is always a bummer because I love being at racetracks.
Yeah, so make sure to check that out at Myrtle Beach Speedway. I'm hoping to be at a dirt race up here in the Northeast.
Dirt race.
Of course, we're dirt racing.
Look at you.
Oh, yeah. I love dirt racing. Neff, we're going to throw it to my conversation with Matt DiBenedetto. But first, I want to get your take on him this year. He's ran well. Should have had a top five finish maybe at Bristol. What's your take on the 95 team this year?
I mean, I've been a Matty D fan forever. Followed him when he was running late models. Nearly won the late model race at Martinsville years ago. And just a good dude, a good family. And now he's getting an opportunity with the 95 team that's basically a satellite team from Joe Gibbs. Maybe not quite the buy-in that they had with Furniture Row, but they're still getting Gibbs-level equipment. And I think you put Matty D in that level of equipment, he's going to perform, which we've already started to see this year. And I think that I've said it a couple times this year, and it's starting to look more and more like it, that if all the stars properly align, you could see the 95 actually pull into victory lane this year.
Wouldn't be surprised. So let's throw it to my conversation with Matt DiBenedetto. All right, Matt, you started 20th and finished 24th this past weekend at Richmond. I know it wasn't the finish you wanted, but take us through your weekend as a whole.
It was a really important weekend for us. It kind of stunk because really wanted to run well for, we were carrying the Toyota banner on our car, so Toyota Owner 400, and we had Toyota certified used vehicles and Toyota owners on our car, so really wanted to run well, but that aspect kind of stunk that we just missed it. We started, just kind of off, which has, been kind of rare for us. We've usually unloaded pretty decent, so that's just bound to happen. Obviously not the track we wanted it to happen at, but so we unloaded, we're off, and then that second practice raining out really hurt us because then we just had to totally guess from there and just couldn't get it and struggled all day and started to get it a little better by the end or get a direction, but just really needed to kind of rebaseline, and that not getting that second practice is sort of what just sort of hurt our day and didn't get the finish we wanted at all.
When you're a little bit off, and I mean, there was only 5 cautions at Richmond and maybe 1 green flag stop. So when there's a lack of pit stops, I mean, how much does that affect you as well?
It was just, we were actually put, I mean, maybe a little more cautions would have helped us to try and figure out how to get our car better.
Right.
Cause we started to get a little bit of a direction at the end on it and maybe could have, if we had a little more time. I know it sounds crazy in a 400 lap race, but we were just so lost on a direction for the car because we were so far off. If we could have, if there would have been a little more cautions, probably would have given us more chances to take big swings at it and get it dialed in. But it took us, a little bit to figure it out. And then at the end, we got it to where it had clips of speed for a little bit. Our times were actually decent, but we were just so far behind the 8 ball at that point. It didn't much matter. So it was just a tough weekend, tough situation, tough weekend. I mean, for a lot of people, some people started, pretty off, and a lot of people had work to do.
Yeah, but we saw drivers at the beginning of the race, like Eric Jones, Denny Hamlin, Daniel Suarez, all these guys go to the back for their inspection issues, but they really can never get to the front. So why do you think it's so hard to pass at Richmond these days?
A big challenge that was presented this time over years past was a couple things, but mainly being aero tight was really big, fast. You know, we didn't fight it quite as much before. And also, the tire didn't lay down quite as much rubber as it has, you know, in some years past. It wasn't bad, but it just didn't lay quite as much rubber down. So that makes it a little bit tougher to move around the racetrack a lot. And it, you know, causes a little bit less tire fall off. So all those things, you know, combined just made it a little bit tougher to, you know, drive from the back to the front.
And we've seen in the past tracks like New Hampshire, which is also, you know, a flat track, put down that VHT, and it seems like it's made for a little better racing there. Could that help at Richmond, or is that just kind of a lost cause and it wouldn't really matter?
I don't think they... you're asking if it would help
at Richmond? Yeah, yep.
You know, I'm not sure. I don't think so, actually. I think what changes the racing more than anything at Richmond is actually the tire compound. Because we've had, you know, different tires at Richmond before, and one of them we had laid a whole bunch of rubber down, and when it did that, we actually at one point were running, I was running up against the wall.
Oh, wow.
I'm running the top and both ends, and so, and the groove kept changing all over the place, and it was the most fun I've ever had in my entire life at Richmond. Just racing all over the racetrack. So it's actually, the track is perfect. Like, it's one of the most awesome, perfect racetracks where you can move around. It's just totally dependent on the tire that we bring there and the compound on it and how much it wears out. The more it wears out, the more it lays rubber down, the more that you see of that extreme moving around.
Got it. Now, one of the big talking points going into the weekend was the new qualifying procedure, only having 5 minutes in the first round. I'm just curious, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, at Richmond, it was probably not necessary, but it's, you know, but qualifying's been kind of just crazy all year, so I understand, you know, where they were coming from or why they tried that. But, yeah, it was tough at Richmond because if you were lined up toward the back pit road, it just made it, you know, real hard because this one was the opposite of others where you actually wanted to go out on a fresh racetrack. There was actually speed there and that, which is opposite of Bristol. It was quick and just hard to get a clean lap, and the track slowed down a little bit at the end by the time we were able to go. So, you know, it's just all part of the challenges that you're presented and, you know, kind of out of our control.
And obviously, you know, moving forward, if this continues, one slip-up, I mean, it's going to be really costly, correct? Because you can't really come back in. You don't have time to come back down and cool the car down, fix the air pressures, whatever you need to do to make a good lap.
Yeah, for sure. So that could also affect it and make people want to maybe go out a little sooner. I mean, it's a short session. So basically, you just got to try and find a clean hole at these the shorter tracks. But we don't have a short track coming up for a while, so... I'm curious to see what they'll do for the mile and a half. So I think they're still working on tweaking a little bit to figure out the best solution for it all. Just this new rules package has changed kind of everything. And that's, you know, so it's been a work in progress trying to figure out what the best solutions are.
All right, Matt, we're a quarter of the way through the year now. How would you gauge the first 9 races so far in 2019 with Levine Family Racing?
As far as our speed and performance, I would say it's good, and everybody's doing a good job, and we keep getting better as a team and establishing better communication, all that. And we've had some really good speed at a lot of racetracks, like Daytona, obviously. We had arguably one of the fastest cars, led the most laps, and a lot of other racetracks we've had top 15 cars. I mean, Phoenix, we were running between 9th and 12th or 13th. Had an alternator issue and battery died at the end, so that killed our finish. Atlanta, we would have finished top 15 easily, got hit on pit road. Just not as bad of luck as Kyle Larson, but we have not had a lot of things just go our way. So good speed, good performance, but not the finishes we deserve at all. On Bristol, we had a little miscommunication, and, you know, obviously hindsight's 2020, should have stayed out on that last caution. If we would have, I think we would have finished between 2nd and 4th, and we pitted and got stuck back in 12th, so, which still wasn't bad, but not near the, again, that's driving me insane because I feel like we haven't gotten any finishes we deserve the entire year yet, so, which is very frustrating.
Got it. Now, obviously, you have the alliance with Joe Gibbs Racing, and they're killing it. Won 6 out of the 9 races so far. But how much are you able to lean on the JGR drivers, you know, now that you have their information and share the data?
Yeah, so we don't get all the info.
Got it.
And data, so it's we're not like at the same level as Ferncharola is yet. Hopefully, I mean, we hope to grow the team to that level because obviously they're great partners and great to work with. But as far as just my relationship with the drivers, it's very good. What meant the most to me was at Daytona. Obviously, this is really my first time in the Cup Series being in a more competitive situation.
Right.
And that's no disrespect to any of my previous rides. Those are just kind of family teams trying to do the best they can with what they had. So this is my first more competitive situation in the Cup Series. And what meant a lot is that Daytona, we were, part of the plan. And all the Toyota guys, Kyle Busch and Martin Truex and all of them were locked to my bumper the whole race. And we basically pulled the train and led the most laps and worked really well with those guys. And that, I think, earned a lot of respect from them. And after that, also, I've known Kyle very well, or pretty well. And he always gives you honest feedback and honest opinions. He's kind of my go-to guy for advice. And he's been nothing more than great and never makes me feel like I'm bothering him one bit in any situation.
Now, Mike Wheeler obviously came over from the 11 car. What's the chemistry like with him so far, 9 races in?
Yeah, been really good. He's been incredible for our team, just in the fact of knowing where we need to get to grow our team to where we want it to be and to be running competitive week in and week out. Knows what we need to get out of all of our team, all of our guys, out of me. Everyone's done nothing but make me a better driver, feeding me all kinds of information. He's kind of a perfectionist. I laugh, and he's very much so a perfectionist about everything. So I like that. He's been great for our team.
Now, we got an off week before going to Talladega, and you mentioned how well you ran at Daytona, led the most laps. Does that give you confidence, even though the package will be completely different, or do you not know what to expect?
Going into Talladega, I think it's still the run of Daytona still gives some confidence because of how well that we worked with our Toyota teammates.
Uh-huh.
So that's obviously really good, knowing we have a strong group of cars and that we can work together with. But yeah, it will be significantly different. Now going there having giant spoilers and a whole bunch of downforce and punching a huge hole in the air. So I'm curious to see how that goes.
Now, a lot of drivers seem like we might see tandem drafting. That's what they think we might see. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm not sure. I'm really curious to see how it goes. Maybe it'll be a little more similar to the trucks drafting, that could happen where you see some tandem stuff. I don't know. I think it's either going to be that or maybe being like, stuck in traffic like you're on I-77. Because punched such big holes in the air where before, we were in a pack, but you were also really still having to drive the cars and wheel them a little bit, sliding around a little. Where now they're just going to be flat out glued to the racetrack like stock cars and they're punching really big holes in the air. So you might just all be really stuck together, like a little more like the trucks.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, moving forward in the year, what are some of your goals for the 95 team?
I would like to start clicking off more consistent top 15s. And that would be kind of a general goal. And would like to click off some good top 10s. I mean, we kind of missed that opportunity at Bristol. Nobody's fault. But that was frustrating that, we had an easy top 10 car there and finished. So those are just tough to come by. I mean, you're at the Cup Series and you're racing against the best. So that's why I get that's why I lose so much sleep over it when you do have those opportunities. So I just would like to click off consistent top 15s and mainly get the finishes we deserve. Some weeks, I just want to maximize our weekend and get the finishes we deserve. So some weeks that could be finishing, 15th through 17th or 18th. And some weeks that could be finishing in the top 10, and some that could be getting a top five, you know, occasionally. So I just would like to start clicking off consistent finishes and where we deserve to finish.
Now, Matt, I wanted to end with a couple fun questions. Jimmy Johnson ran the Boston Marathon on Monday. I know you're a power lifter, but have you ever thought about running a marathon or even a half marathon?
Oh, no. No way.
Why not? So,
yeah, what he did was, I mean, that's an amazing, amazing accomplishment. And he did it fast. That's a lot of training. And, I mean, and mental toughness that goes into that. So I just don't have a passion for that stuff. I just have a passion for, I mean, I'm very, very into you know, exercise and fitness, and I just do CrossFit related stuff, and I work extremely, extremely hard on it and train excessively overkill hard. but it's just one of my passions is why, just like Jimmy has developed a passion for that, which is incredible. But I'm just the type of guy, I don't know if it's just the way I'm programmed or what, but I enjoy, you know, more of good cross training where we're mixing, you know, weights and strengths involved with the endurance training. So it's more explosive, I guess, training. And it's just what fits my, you know, style and what I love and enjoy. And I feel like it's helped me a ton, as far as in the race car and as far as my mental toughness from day to day life going in there and basically dying every day. So I enjoy that a lot, but definitely what he did was incredible. And I don't think I would have the discipline to be able to do that, cause I don't enjoy the long distance stuff like that.
Yeah. I'm in the same boat with you. I'll get you out of here on this one though. Any plans for the off week? Obviously we don't have a race this week before going to Talladega. So are you doing anything fun?
I'm going to buy a new grill today. I'm going to be probably making some steaks this weekend and being as lazy as humanly possible with my wife, Taylor, and our dog, Brian.
Sounds like fun, Matt. Thanks for coming on the show, and good luck in Talladega.
All right. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
All right, y'all. That was a fun conversation with Matt DiBenedetto. I feel like he could legitimately earn a victory this year should the right circumstances happen throughout a race. You think of Bristol, he's running top six and then pitted after a late caution and fell back to 12th after being in the wrong line on a restart. Like you said, he could have probably finished top three or four had, you know, circumstances gone his way. But also always enjoy breaking down these races with Neff, as he has so much insight in the sport. But that wraps up this week's show. Again, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. And until next week's show, we out.